Your host hasn't seen everything in sports, but sometimes he acts like it, and his guests probably have. Now, the host of Scorecard Scribblings, your sports guy, Brent Weber.
The sweet science, mano a mano back in the day, boxing has been part of the sporting fiber dating back to, well, you know, before they let lions and humans fight in the gladiator days. But until recent decades, boxing in the United States and in other parts of the world was primarily the domain of man-on-man, dudes. And that has changed, and that is a good thing. In this Me Too movement era, and I'm a dad, I admit it, I'm pulling for equality in all things, look at a career that began when it was really tough to get the opportunity. We're joined by author, two-time Golden Gloves champion, boxer, retired boxer, and journalist Alicia Doyle, who is just publishing her first book. It's a nonfiction novel, and it is called Fighting Chance, and she joins us now. I guess you're not out on the beach, right, in Ventura County, are you?
No, not this evening, but it's tempting.
Alicia, for those who, putting it in perspective, we've got time, and I want to tell you that people who are listening to this that don't know anything about boxing, that they're not alone, or let's say people who prefer other sports or yada, 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 this is the kind of interview that I love to do. It is about finding something in sport that helps you heal, helps you grow, or as one of your mentors said, teaches things like the ABCs in reverse, right? To conceive, believe, achieve. You were just, and we'll talk about your background a little bit, but you were a young girl, a young woman, finding your way. You knew you loved to write, but you didn't have any interest in boxing until you were in your mid to late 20s.
Correct. And the way that occurred was quite serendipitous because I was alone in the newsroom one night and the phone rang. Nobody was there. So I answered it. And it was a community activist wanting press for a gym for at-risk youth called Kid Gloves. And this is in Simi Valley, California. And the minute she told me it was boxing, I turned off. Because back then I did not appreciate boxing for the sport it was. I actually thought boxing was the dark side. So initially I told her that perhaps I would pass it along to the sports reporter. And she said, you don't understand what I'm telling you. This gym for at-risk youth, it was destroyed. And this was back in the 1990s. And the gym was destroyed as a result of the El Nino rains, which caused quite a bit of flooding. So as a result, this gym for at-risk youth was destroyed, and these kids had nowhere to go. So that was the story. And I reluctantly went on this assignment and met the gentleman in charge. His name was Robert Ortiz. And he was such a nice, kind-hearted gentleman that I opened my heart a little bit more to write more stories about Kid Gloves. And in doing so, discovered what the sport did for these kids. And these are kids from broken homes. They deal with abuse. A couple of them were under house arrest. They are challenged in many ways. And there was something about this sport that gave them incredible self-esteem and helped them transcend their rage and anger in a safe space where they received unconditional love. And so that's how I discovered boxing.
I was going to say, and so more. And I have so many thoughts for you, but obviously Robert Ortiz and that Kid Gloves experience was beyond normally inspiring. You know, it obviously took a while for you to see the impact, but there's a quote early on when you're talking about when you were getting to know Robert, and he said, boxing isn't about hurting others or getting hurt. Boxers face their own fears. It's about learning to let go of your own insecurities. Who can't relate to that? And you learned that, I guess, that's part of what hooked you in the beginning, isn't it?
Correct. And there were a series of events that occurred before I actually started to compete, but there was just something quite beautiful about the sport of boxing, and I never thought I would use that word to describe boxing, but it is. For me, it was a deeply spiritual experience, a journey of transcendence, And I resonated with the children that I interviewed at Kid Clubs. I talked to a lot of those at-risk youth, and I'm there as a reporter, as a journalist, so they don't know my origin story, but they're similar in that I grew up in a world of volatility and saw my first act of violence at a very young age, and because I grew up in it, I just assumed it was normal. It became normal, mm-hmm. these things. So I resonated to these kids on that level, them not knowing my origin story. And then what got me into competing was Robert Ortiz had always encouraged me to take an aerobic boxing class. And I never took him up on it. To be honest, at the time, I thought it was kind of silly. It didn't make any sense to me. And what happened, what got me into the gym that day to take an aerobic boxing class was I went through a really bad breakup with a guy who punched me in the face more than once. And naturally, I was quite angry about that. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. Just the typical cycle that, you know, women of victims of domestic violence go through. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to hit something really hard. I was so angry that it had occurred, that I allowed it to occur, that it happened to me. So I showed up at Robert's gym, gearing up to take an aerobic boxing class. And I tell you, after hitting that heavy bag for an hour, I felt better.
Yeah.
So that's really how it started, was that this thing, just punching that bag for an hour, just helped me let go of all that, at least for that hour, let me go of all the rage that I was dealing with in that moment.
The book is Fighting Chance. Alicia Doyle is joining us right now, AliciaDoyle.com, and you can also purchase the book on Amazon. You do get into your personal story, and mm-hmm. As I mean this in all respect, because you mention it at near the end of the book. You say, hey, I didn't win championships. I didn't go out with, you know, people don't mm-hmm. necessarily know your story outside of boxing and outside of maybe even Southern California, some fighters, but they might know you more as a journalist. But the fact mm-hmm. is, we needed to know your story. And I want to say that there are so many young women and men, boys and mm-hmm. girls, who mm-hmm. go through breakups, family breakups, have nowhere to turn, don't know mm-hmm. where to turn, have doubts, have losses, try to commit suicide. So many of these things, you don't throw us your personal story right at the beginning, but it's mm-hmm. important that we understood what brought this very, very obviously a very smart, dynamic person to this point later on in life. That had to be hard mm-hmm. to write all that, though.
Oh, and I thank you. I appreciate that you get that, because those were the parts of the book that I really struggled with. You know, bringing the question up, why would a woman box? And people have asked me that so many times, and even now, and I retired from boxing 20 years ago. So I had to ask myself that question, why would a woman box? And yes, it was very exciting. And yes, I did it at a time when about 400 women in America were competing in amateur and pros, so I was one of few females. But for me, it went much, much deeper, and I thought to myself, why would a woman step into a world of hurt like that, the hurt business? And I looked back at my past, and I think I just had a lot of suppressed anger, mm-hmm. suppressed resentment, things that I had not processed, that I wasn't willing to process. Early on, and it wasn't until I found boxing, and this is still very hard to articulate, but there's something about boxing that changed me from the inside out, and it really did make me look at my deepest fears. And I had a coach tell me once that boxing will bring up all the fears you've ever had in your life, including when you were a little girl. And I thought that was quite poignant, because first of all, my coach didn't know my story from mm-hmm. being young and what I went through, and I thought it was interesting that he said those things to me, because it did. And it wasn't just the fights, it was the training. There's something about it that just, for me, it made me dig really deep, and it did bring everything up to the surface. And what that did, in essence, is it forced me to look at it head on. As painful as it was, I realized that the only way out was through. And I had to look at these demons. I had to face them head on. I had to decipher them in order to heal on my own. And that was a very difficult process.
Well, I'm glad you found your way to the ring. We're going to take a break, if that's okay. We're going to keep Alicia Doyle here to talk. I have so many questions. That young cub reporter who talked her way into a stringer's job with the L.A. Times and landed at the Ventura County Star one day. We're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, what do you do when somebody says you're too pretty to box? We're going to find that out when we return with Alicia Doyle, the author of Fighting Chance. You're listening to Scorecard Scribbling. Stay with us.
Celebrating 20 years in business, Five Star Bank is a community business bank serving small to medium-sized businesses and is a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Five Star Bank was founded in 1999 by a group of local entrepreneurs who wanted to create personalized banking services inspired by shared vision and goals. Today, Five Star Bank is among the top 5% of performing banks in the nation for banks of its size. Five Star Bank proudly serves farmers, ranchers, and growers in the agricultural community, commercial real estate developers and construction, those who lead nonprofits and churches, and entrepreneurs in emerging technology. Five Star Bank is also committed to small businesses through a robust SBA department. They understand that when it comes to business, timing is critical. Their sense of urgency and speed to serve are part of the foundation of their success. Visit fivestarbank.com and visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The Pacific Justice Institute. This is The Legal Edge, defending your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. Here's Brad Dickus.
After complaints from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, a U.S. Air Force base in Illinois removed a commander's name from a prayer breakfast invitation. The MRFF asserts that the commander violated the constitutional rights of the subordinates. But this isn't their first complaint, folks. Other cases involve demanding military services to remove Bibles placed on tables honoring prisoners of war and pressuring the Army and Air Force Exchange Services store to stop selling, quote, Jesus candy. Well, Pacific Justice Institute urges Christians to boldly live out their faith.
The Pacific Justice Institute provides legal representation to individuals without charge. Learn more at pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org.
Alicia Doyle fell in love with boxing when she was a newspaper journalist, went on assignment at a boxing gym for at-risk youth called Kid Gloves. Fast forward, she became a Gold Gloves tournament champion a couple of times, had a pro fight, and two decades later is still trying to understand how powerful boxing has been in her life. It was not a sport that you grew up with, and you are we are blessed that you've written this book, Fighting Chance, and appreciate you joining me tonight.
Well, thank you, Brent, for the kind words. I appreciate that.
I highlighted some sections. Isn't technology great? On my phone as I'm reading the book. And at the end of one of the early chapters is one of the obvious questions. You knew this is a man's sport, right? And we're talking about in a time period still, the 90s, late 90s, which just seems like yesterday to you and I, but to some people it's a whole century ago. But even at that time, and now it seems so silly, but at that time you knew this is what you were going to get around every corner. Why do you want to box? You're too pretty to box. And you actually have that quote in there that somebody said, you're too pretty to box. Your response was golden, I think.
Yes, and the gentleman that said that to me, his heart was in the right place. I believe he didn't want me getting hurt. But my thought process around that was, what does my reflection in the mirror have to do with me wanting to compete as one of few women in America in what's considered the toughest sport known to man? I didn't understand where he was coming from in that. Maybe he assumed I was just going to get my clock clean. and luckily I did not, because I was pretty good at it. So that was initial. And, you know, and it came back to also my feelings about objectification and being a female in the male-dominated sport. I did have to work twice as hard to earn the respect from those men And especially going into to big boxing training centers like Benny the Jets, where I was the only female there. In fact, my coach, who was Stan Ward, he's a phenomenal coach. I got the nickname before they even called me by my name. They just called me Coach's Girl.
Yeah. Hey, that's Coach's Girl over there. Because you were the only one, right?
Yes, I was the only one competing. And that was a trial by fire process because when I was at Kid Gloves and I was sparring at Kid Gloves, my sparring partners, they took it easy on me. Of course, they didn't want to hurt me. But when I started stepping up into the competitive realm and going to these other gyms, at Jets Gym, those boys did not take it easy on me at all.
No, not to get. And, oops, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying boys didn't take it easy on you once you stepped up, and yet you kept going. I mean, you address your doubts throughout, and I think this is important for all of us. You quite literally got knocked down, and you didn't always think about getting up. I mean, you openly said, what am I trying to prove here? What am I trying to do?
It did come to that because it's such a difficult sport, and there is a pain factor involved, and I couldn't stay away. I had like a love-hate relationship with boxing where, you know, a grueling training session or a really gnarly sparring session, I would say to myself, okay, that's it. I'm never doing it again. But then the next day, I'm back at the boxing gym. So there was something about it that was like calling me back. I couldn't stay away from it because of how it made me feel when I was done, when I was done with the training session or when I was done with the sparring or even after being done with a fight. There was something that always brought me back.
You, before we get to the actual fights and kind of the difference, the shocking nature of that for anybody who competes, I want to go back to your training when you mentioned, because it's putting it in perspective for people, okay, we're talking about just the post-Jane Fonda era, right? So aerobics was the big thing, VHS machines in the 80s, and then we're moving on. More and more people wanted more. Specifically, women demanded more. And you mentioned in there briefly, and we have a connection here in that, you know, you would work out or you'd go to Billy Blank's where he had his Taibo. And that's in the neighborhood where you were living and working, I guess. And, you know, at the time, heck, Billy was even working with pro boxer Sugar Ray Leonard trying to incorporate some of his stuff. But you made the point, and I think I really get this. You make the point that Taibo, quote unquote, not quoting by here, but paraphrasing, Taibo was kind of a walk in the park compared to training for boxing, right?
Yes, and you know, I loved taking Taibo. It was a fantastic way to stay in shape. It's a great workout.
And Billy was great. That was great.
Oh, I love Billy Blank. He's a great guy. And I really thought that I was in fantastic shape. I didn't realize how poor shape I was actually in until I started the boxing workout. That's when I realized, holy cow, there's this whole other world of fitness that I had never discovered. The Taibo was a great foundation because, you know, it's really good cardio. So I had the cardio down, but it was a completely different world to train as a boxer.
So as an athlete, as you became an athlete, as someone who obviously you love writing as well, we can see that. We see that in some of the books, and we see what you've done since then, and with the book Fighting Chance. But, you know, to me, I'm sure there were plenty of people who thought, well, she's just here to get a story. And let's be honest, a lot of times I do wind up going fly fishing. I haven't done this, but doing something because I got a story out of it. And I fell in love. I loved it, but I wouldn't have stuck with it. So you were never really – that was never really it at all, was it? You found out about – you fell in love with boxing because of a story, but it was never, hey, I'm going to one day write a book about my boxing career.
Oh, no, not at all. And, you know, and I think it's just interesting how life unfolds and how things play out because, you know, I just happened to be in the newsroom that night and I just happened to be the one to answer the phone. All these things that had to come into play for me to get into that gym, you know, I went through that volatile breakup. Had that not happened, I probably never would have been in the boxing gym to take that aerobic boxing class. It never would have evolved to the point that it did, and I think it's interesting. I just think it's very interesting, and I do believe I was meant to be there. I do believe there was a higher power, some kind of higher source that knew I needed something, that there was some kind of void I had in my heart that I had never addressed. I was 28 years old when I started boxing.
Right.
So, you know, being 28 years old and still not really deciphering everything I had gone through, basically pretending that it didn't happen and not really sharing it with anybody even close to me, because quite frankly, I didn't want people to know these things about me. Mm-hmm. I didn't want them to know what I went through as a kid or what I overcame. I was embarrassed by those things. So, but then again, that getting back to the only way out is through, I realized that if I didn't address it, it was just going to get worse over time. And it was going to eat me alive.
Yeah. I'm glad you found it. I'm reading a section from the book right here that I'd like to share if you don't mind. And it's why I really encourage men, women, anybody who's struggling, thinking they don't know wherever they belong, that they don't they don't see themselves getting to the other side of their own life because they can only feel the pain of that. There's a, and I'm not sure, I think, I'm not sure what page it's on, but you say, but my reasons for stepping in the ring came from a much more primal place, starting with the anger and violence I witnessed and experienced as a child, insidiously evolving into my own rage that took my lifetime to decipher and transcend. To understand this evolution, it is important for me to convey the pieces of circumstance and the sum of all parts that led me to immerse myself in one of the most brutal sports known to man. The short explanation, I was raised in an atmosphere of volatility, too young to understand the nature of these occurrences until I became an adult.
Yes.
Powerful.
Thank you.
Sport can do that. For a man or a woman, there's a tribe to it, too, that, that helps you find your way, right?
Yes, and it's still hard for me to articulate or even, you know, encapsulate how and why it does that. Why it makes you look, why it, for me it made me look so deep inside of myself, why it raised those things back up. And I'll be honest, I didn't like it at first. I didn't like that it did that to me. I didn't want to remember these things because just thinking about it or speaking about it, it felt like it gave life to them again, like they were happening again. And I wanted to forget those things. But I also knew that if I didn't just get through it, I'd be living with it my whole life. And I didn't want to have any regrets. And, you know, and it was a difficult process. It was hard.
Sure.
It was emotionally hard. It was spiritually hard to dig that deep. And, you know, and I do believe I came out on the other side to a certain extent. But to say that it's gone and that anger and that rage is completely gone, that would be a lie. And I'm not going to lie.
Right.
It's still there. I still have it. It's just become a dull roar. And I've just found ways to deal with it, much healthier ways to deal with it. It doesn't hurt as much. But memories are memories, and they're living. So when I do have a memory from the past, I work through it. I look at it. I don't try to escape it with anything. And it's hard. I sit down and I quiet myself. I ask myself, you know, where did the trigger come from, what I'm feeling. I look at it. I look at it head on. Because the only way out is through. And then I notice that eventually it does dissipate until it comes up again for whatever reason. But I just have better coping mechanisms now. And perhaps it's because I survived the battle in the ring numerous times. You survive a battle like that, it changes you.
Sure. Because those doubts pop up even when you're in the ring, and that's what people don't understand. The challenges become new. You can never prepare for that first exchange with someone in a real boxing match.
Absolutely not. And, you know, there's not even a way for sparring to prepare you. I mean, a real fight is a real fight. And, you know, sparring is child's play. When you get in a match with one-on-one battle in the square, toe-to-toe with somebody, you know, that person, my brother, bless his heart, I love my brother, but he did not like that I boxed, my brother Tony. He was worried about his little sister, and he would always tell me that boxing is legal murder. He said, if your opponent kills you, she gets to go home and have dinner. And he was just trying to scare me to have me back out of these fights, which I never did. But, you know, he's right. He used to call it the hurt business, and he's right. So, yes, yeah, so there's this heightened awareness. But what I love about the fight and being in the fight is it forced me to be in the present moment. There was not any room for anything else but that moment. All the stuff from the past or anything I was dealing with or any insecurities or rage, there was no room for that in there, not in that square. And that's a beautiful thing.
Alicia Doyle is our guest, the author of Fighting Chance. She's a former boxer, a former Golden Gloves winner, and she's sharing her story. There's quotes throughout the nonfiction novel Fighting Chance at each chapter as we go to break. Muhammad Ali, you don't lose if you get knocked down. You lose if you stay down. We can all relate to that because boy, I don't know what you really learn about yourself until you have been knocked down proverbially or literally. And when we come back, I want to talk about the act of getting in the ring, fighting, and even making a decision to fight a pro fight with Alicia Doyle. You're listening to Scorecard Scribblings.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Hi, I'm Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Many people may not know that we started a propane tank refurbishing business about 5 years ago. We pick up tanks from various propane companies, bring them to our yard in Anderson, where we blast the old paint and rust off, repaint them with a very durable paint, and then install new valves. The tank is just like a new tank. We primarily sell these tanks in truckloads of 45 to other propane companies. I'm telling you about our new business because many of you are installing generators because of the probability of the power being shut off this summer. Shasta Gas Propane now sells standby generators and propane tanks so that you won't be left without power. Give us a call at 365-3793 so we can come to your house and give you a quote on a generator and tank. Again, that's 365-3793.
It's time to glow at the Redding Rancheria Community Fund 2020 Year to Remember. Saturday, March 7th at the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center. Since the inception of the fund in 2002, it has granted approximately $3.4 million to the local area. So come join us in celebrating the 71 organizations that the Redding Rancheria has been able to help with a surprise gift of $10,000. All proceeds from this event benefit the Redding Rancheria Community Fund, furthering the help the Community Fund does for our area. So come experience firsthand all the good the Community Fund does and support the tribe.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Welcome back to Scorecard Scribblings. I'm Brent Weber. Our guest is Alicia Doyle, author of Fighting Chance. It's her story about a young journalist who, I don't even know if it's fair to say, fell in love with boxing, but became, lightning struck you after doing a story, and then becoming part of the boxing world. And we're talking about not on the periphery. We're talking about in the gyms, like there are across America, oftentimes in poorer parts of town, but they're there, the police athletic league gyms, the neighborhood gyms like the ones you fought in, and tens of thousands of lives, young men and women now, that don't have anywhere to go. You had somewhere to go, but the message that was in that square wouldn't let you go.
What do you mean?
I mean that once it got you, you had to finish the journey. You had to see where it would take you. I mean, did you realize that at the time?
No, I did not. I did not. And it's just, there was something about just every time I went in to train, I would always feel better because I was still trying to transcend and decipher, you know, all the stuff from my past. And every time I went into the gym to train, because the training was so grueling, there was just something about it that just made me overcome that in very small steps. And the training made me feel so good, and probably because it was a respite from the demons in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether I was training or competing or sparring, I was forced to be in the present moment because it was so incredibly difficult physically. I didn't have room for anything else. And that's probably why I felt better whenever I was doing it. And that's what kept calling me back. But no, when I went on that assignment, I was reluctant at first. I didn't expect to fall in love with the sport for what it was and for what it really, for what it did for all these kids. That was the most poignant thing for me, was how could the hurt business help these kids deal with their hurt business? And it did. So that was very attractive to me, and I did think on some level it could do that for them, it could do that for me, but again, I never would have gone in there and taken that first step had I not been through that volatile breakup. It never would have happened, and that's why part of me believes, like, everything happens for a reason, there are no coincidences, you know, not that I deserve to get punched by this guy, but that's what got me in the gym. So I just think it's interesting, and because of that, and in some small way, I am able to look back and forgive that person, because I do wonder, would I be where I am now with everything, with the championship titles, with the book, would any of it have happened had that not all gone down? And I think that's interesting.
The idea to step in the ring and actually fight in a competitive fight, and when that first fight happened, we mentioned a little bit before the break. In your experience, tell us, you know, a little bit about what that was like, because obviously by the last time you fought, you had a completely different understanding. But you remember losing that first fight?
The exhibition or the actual?
Well,
okay.
Yeah. Take me through it.
I remember every fight like it was yesterday. And this was 20 years ago. So, yes, my first exhibition match, which just means it doesn't count. It doesn't go on the books. So my coach, Stan Ward, said, you know, he wanted me to fight the exhibition because he wanted to see where I was. And I said, what do you mean physically? Because I'm in the best shape I've ever been in my life. And he's like, no, mentally. We need to know if you can handle going toe-to-toe in the square with somebody who wants to take you out. Because that coach would always tell me that boxing was 90% mental, only 10% physical. So I was like, sure, why not? And I remember being there, and because there were so few women doing it at the time, I had no competitor. And I thought, well, maybe I won't have to box. And like 10 minutes before fight time, this young woman walks in, and she was a teenager. So I was 28. She was 19. She's a world champion now, Layla McCarter. She's amazing.
Right.
But we did this exhibition, and I'm thinking it's going to be like sparring because it doesn't count on the books. It's called an exhibition. It's a show. But I tell you, that was a fight. That was a real fight. And I had never felt that level of pain before or that level of fear. And I got a standing eight very early on in the fight. And what a standing eight is, for people that don't know, it's when the referee stops the fight because he's worried that one of the fighters is in danger of getting hurt or knocked out. So the ref stepped in with standing eight for me because he was worried I was going to get knocked out or hurt because Layla was just overpowering me with everything she did.
Right.
And at the end of the eight counts, I was still standing. He asked if I was okay. I said yes. He's like, do you want to keep going? And I said, yes. I didn't want to. But, you know, there were a crowd of people there. There were all the guys from my gym watching. I didn't want to fall in front of them. So I kept going. I survived that standing eight. I went the full three rounds. There were 3 2-minute rounds. I did not want to keep going. Every time in the corner, I just wanted it to end. And but then at the end, when I did survive it, I can't even explain the sense of elation. It's hard to explain surviving that kind of a battle to walk away. You know, and I thought she had broke my nose. I mean, those punches hurt. But as soon as I looked at my face in the mirror, I realized, like, she didn't break my nose. I wasn't bleeding. I was never a bleeder. You know, got a, a couple black and blue eyes from it, but that was about it. And that's when I realized, the body is stronger than I thought, because my mind was telling me I was injured. My mind was telling me my face was broken, but my body was stronger than that. And looking in the mirror showed me that. And I thought that was interesting.
Very interesting. From there, I mean, you had your moments, right? You backed out of a fight. You know, and you expressed regret when you were winning fights. Sometimes you didn't want to hurt somebody. All these things, I think, they're human emotions that I would hope every boxer goes through. To me, it tells me you were staying in touch or reaching your elevated humanity in a way. You were growing during those times.
Absolutely, and I was surprised, too, when I got to the point where I actually felt bad about hurting these girls. And I'll be honest, I didn't feel bad with all of them. But, because I've had 10 amateur fights, 5 wins, 5 losses, 3 wins by knockout. And so as I was rising up, and my first Golden Gloves championship that I won was phenomenal. That was the best feeling in the world. And it was against a competitor who was not very nice to me in the beginning. So we had this rivalry. So that was kind of a joy to win that fight. But then it, as it got along further and I got to know these girls, I liked them.
Yeah.
And it was a detriment to me because, you know, boxing is the hurt business. And if you get in that square and you don't want to hurt your opponent, then that's going to be a problem. So I saw it becoming a problem later on. Yes, there was one girl at my second Golden Gloves championship. I broke her nose pretty early on, and when you break a nose, it bleeds a lot.
Right.
And she was a kid. She was a kid, and I didn't talk to her before the fight, but afterwards, you know, told her what a great job she did. You know, we embraced, and she said, "You broke my nose." And the way she said it, she was just so sweet. I think she was a waitress in town.
Oh, wow.
And I remember thinking, just feeling horrible about that.
Yeah.
Because a broken nose, from what I've heard, it hurts pretty bad. And she's a pretty girl, and I broke her face. So, yes, I did start to feel bad with the girls I hurt, and that helped the transcendence as well, though.
The spoils are not always pretty in boxing, of course, and that's one of those examples. But when did they begin to call you the disaster diva? Because you're not a bleeder, but apparently, as you're saying, opponents did.
You know, Robert Ortiz gave me that name. He was the one. I want to say it was after my first Golden Gloves fight when I knocked the girl out, when I won that fight by TKO. And then from that point on, every time I'd go in the gym, Robert would scream from across the room, Disaster Diva, and it just stuck. So Robert Ortiz is the one that came up with that title for me.
Well, she is the author of Fighting Chance, Alicia Doyle. You can find out more about the book, about her, AliciaDoyle.com. And when we come back, I'll tee up with a few things. I want to find out what you're doing. I know you're working with your community. You're working on another book beyond this and staying very active. And I know that your heart is really deep and supportive of the kids, boxing and so on. And then I also want to get your take on the state of women's boxing now and so on. So we've got one more segment with Alicia Doyle, and this is Scorecard Scribblings.
Mm-hmm. Bill, Susan, you guys look amazing. What's the secret?
Our new Sleep Number 360 smart bed.
He chooses the comfort on his side, I choose mine.
We feel incredible.
Ooh, I heard about that. Can it really help you fall asleep faster?
Yes, by gently warming our feet on either side.
But can it help keep you asleep?
Yes, it senses our movements and automatically adjusts to keep us both comfortable all night.
I don't think it's a secret anymore.
Sleep Number. This is not a bet. It's proven quality sleep from $9.99.
So what's Scorecard Scribbling's all about?
I was scared for my life at that point. I remember looking to the right and seeing all the medical supplies there, and I'm just thinking, are they going to cut off a leg? What are we doing here?
I had a coach that would come up to me on the plane, stick his hand out. I knew what he wanted. Who am I not to give them to him? Like, I thought, okay, job security.
We came to the ballpark every day. We knew we were going to win. It's a great experience, a great feeling to be on a club like that.
Scorecard Scribblings with Brent Weber, Wednesday night from 6 to 7 on KCNR.
It's the President's Day sales event at Redding Kia, home of the 20-year, 200,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. Get $2,500 Kia customer cash instant savings on the 2020 Kia Optima LX. And nominate your favorite teacher at the dealership in our Cash for Kids Classrooms promotion. No purchase necessary. Winning teacher gets $1,000 for their classroom. Details and entry form at Facebook and RedingKia.com. Sale ends 2/29/2020. Redding Kia. RedingKia.com.
As we remember the anniversary of the North State fires, Northern Valley Catholic Social Service would like to thank you. Because of you, NVCSS has served over 26,000 people in the North State. Because of you, children have returned to school. Our communities are rebuilding. Families have a new place to call home. People are healing. Northern Valley Catholic Social Service thanks you. Together, we will continue inspiring hope and transforming lives.
Alicia Doyle, in her book, Fighting Chance, writes, with any great love, there are ups and downs, euphoria, and devastating heartbreak. My love for boxing hit all sides of this emotional spectrum, and in the end, I learned the power of dedication and sacrifice and the personal rewards that come with faith. The boxing ring is a metaphor for life, a place where the fight starts inward, and once that fight is won, in the mind, anything is possible. And that is from Fighting Chance, her nonfiction novel that's available now. You can go to Amazon and purchase the book and learn more at AliciaDoyle.com. And we're in round four of our Scorecard Scribblings interview, Alicia. You know, writing is cathartic. Writing about your own life is cathartic. When you hear me read those words, I hope you feel good about how you can inspire other people by telling the story.
Oh, thank you very much, Brent. You're the first person that has read it back to me like that. And part of me is like, wow, I'm surprised I wrote that. So, yes, I think it comes across. And I worked very hard just to convey some kind of inspiration. And, you know, I would meditate, I would pray before I wrote anything down in that novel. Because I just felt that it was important because, you know, once it's out there, it's out there. And I did not want to certainly harm anyone by writing what I wrote and recalling some things, but more about just the healing process and that with some work and dedication that you can really overcome anything. And it's not always easy, but the rewards are tremendous.
Now, it's been 2 decades since you've been in the ring, and you don't go spar every now and then. You don't just drop into the gym and work the heavy bag. I'm guessing you could do that at home if you wanted, but life got busy for you after you decided to step out of the ring and get back to focusing on your writing career and more.
Yes. No, I do not spar anymore, and I'll be honest, I do not miss that because sparring is hard. But I am still involved at Kid Gloves, certainly, because Robert Ortiz, the gym is still there. We still serve at-risk youth. So I'm a volunteer boxing coach for the children's class, and they range from age 4 to 14. And I love being around them and just seeing them change over time and watching their self-esteem soar. It's priceless.
And you've been – and in your community, I mean, we don't do things to get awards or to be honored – but you've received some accolades in the last few years, Ongoing service and contributions to the annual Ed Hunt Rehab Point for People with Disabilities. They honored you a few years ago, and distinguished community service. Those mean a lot because those are giving back things, right?
Yes, absolutely. And for both of the awards that you just noted, I had no idea I was getting them. It's just something I showed up and they were given to me, and I was honored because I certainly, as a journalist, don't go out there for people to give me awards, but they just felt a sense of gratitude because I do specialize in good news. I'm known as the writer who specializes in good news. So I write about a lot of causes and nonprofits and people that overcome incredible odds. And I love writing these stories because they inspire me. So when I got those awards, I never expected it. And I was honored to receive them.
Well, and when we think about it, I'm a journalist as well, obviously, and we are in a time of media illiteracy, journalism illiteracy, mm-hmm. Poor practices, mm-hmm. all these things. And when I worked as a college instructor for a few years, and one of the things I tried to tell my students, young journalism students, is that, we have to take the high road with the truth, and that means there's the notorious by nature, I understand, is news. The notorious, the things that are unusual, the crime and this, and they're important to a community. Mm-hmm. But the percentage of good things that go on, to me, mm-hmm. far outweighs the percentage of those notorious stories that we tend to focus on, and then they take on new lives in the social media. How do we fight that? I guess just keep throwing the good fight out there, the good stories out there.
Yes, and I agree with you. There are much more good news out there than bad news. And, when I was a reporter on staff at these publications, I had to cover what they wanted me to cover, and I was good at it. I did very well. I covered crime for a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But even though I was good at it, it didn't always make me feel good to report it or write it. And then when people read it, it didn't make them feel good either. And I just felt that I had a higher purpose, that there was something that I could contribute in a positive way through my writing, that I could still write, but I could do it in such a way that when I'm interviewing, I'm inspired. When I'm writing it, I'm inspired. And therefore, when people read it, they're inspired as well. And that, to me, it's very important to put good into the world while I'm here.
We're talking with Alicia Doyle, author of Fighting Chance, which you can get on Amazon. You can go to her website, aliciadoyle.com, aliciadoyle.com, and find out more. Former boxer, I can't get too far. I forgot to ask you about your pro fight. That, I don't want to backtrack too far, but you had one professional fight, and I guess you will mm-hmm. never forget Lisa Valencia.
Oh my goodness! That fight was named the California Female Fight of the Year.
Yeah.
That pro match, and Lisa Valencia. What's so cool about this book coming out is she and I reconnected on Facebook because somebody in her family knew about the book, and Lisa's in it. Of course, she's in it, and that pro fight was. you wear 8-ounce gloves, and the comparison is that in an amateur match, we'd wear 12 to 14-ounce gloves. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but an 8-ounce glove is like a closed fist. It's like
right.
a bare fist.
That's nothing.
So, in other words, it hurts more. And you're not wearing headgear in a pro fight. Your head is not protected. And there was no way any amount of sparring could ever prepare me for that world of pain. It was insane. It was amazing. It was an amazing
20 years
match.
Ago. 20 years ago, and I'm looking at a photo from it, again, no headgear, and mm-hmm. this was in 2000, and I've never been to the Castaic Brickyard, but I have a feeling that has a place of its own repute. I'm sure that is probably a tough place to fight, too.
I don't even think it exists anymore, but yeah, I mean, it was literally in a brickyard. I mean, it was cool. And the ring was outside. It was, set up on a stage with all these lights, and it was televised, which was very exciting. Fighting on any level, boxing on any level, it's very exciting
right.
to be the fighter stepping in the ring, and you walk in with your coach on either side of you, People are cheering, and it's amazing. But the minute that bell rings, it's just you and her. You're in there. I was in there all alone. The coaches weren't fighting. They were yelling cues from the corner, but you're in there on your own with this other person who wants to take you out. And Lisa, she was really tough because I busted her lip pretty early on in the fight, and a busted lip does bleed a lot. But she just kept on fighting, and she was in pain, and she kept on fighting. And in round three, I thought I had her. I thought, okay, I might win this fight. And it was hard. I wanted to quit after every round. It was crazy. But I tell you, I don't know what she got told in her corner for round four. But when she came out in round four, she came out like with the heart of a lion. I don't know how she did it because she was tired, visibly tired. And she just pulled every ounce of strength she had in her and just took me in that fourth round. I lost by a very close decision. There were many people that thought it should have been tied. There were people that thought I should have won. Lisa absolutely deserved that win because of how she managed herself in that last round.
I think of the first Rocky movie, and people get it. Hey, you know, if you live to fight another day and you went the distance kind of thing almost, mm-hmm. and you didn't fight again professionally. I mean, you're getting mm-hmm. into your 30s at this point. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've got a journalism career, paying bills, all those kinds of things that human beings have to do. Any regrets about not fighting again?
No, absolutely not. But I appreciate the question because I had discussions with my coaches about it. And fighting pro is no joke.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dangerous. It's wonderfully exciting, but it's dangerous. And my coaches said, you know, look, you've won all your titles. You've made your mark. I mean, I did very well in the two short years I boxed, winning all those titles. With the publicity in the press, being one of few females in the sport. And that was another thing, you know, it started to become bigger than myself in that my role in the sport, yes, it was healing me on many levels, but it was also raising awareness of the fact that women are amazing athletes, period. And when I was boxing, women were not allowed to compete in the Olympic Games in boxing.
Right.
That was made possible in 2012, which was not that long ago. I do believe myself and all my amazing competitors and all the women doing it at the time that we paved the way for women to be able to box in the Olympics now. So I'm grateful and honored that I could have had that experience, but no, I do not regret never fighting again. It was hard. It was hard. And I suffered. I got beat up pretty bad in that fight. My right ear is still not the same. Mm. My inner right ear, I'm not in any pain, but I know it's there.
Yeah,
and that happened in my pro fight. So, but I just kind of embrace. I embrace that too, as a war wound, a survival.
Yeah. Today, where is the state of women's boxing? Is it fair to say that MMA has kind of, at least for a while, upstaged the women's boxing game a little bit?
I think it has. Probably because MMA is super dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty intense. It's very raw. I love MMA. I love watching it. I think the women in MMA are incredible athletes. I prefer boxing just because I love the sweet science. I think mm-hmm. boxing, it's beautiful. You know, when you see two fighters and see how they mitigate each other and you know, respond to certain punches and get out of the way. I just think that's a remarkable thing to watch. The MMA has taken a bit of precedence, but I think it's just because it's so different and so raw and so incredibly dangerous. And I would say that it's dangerous than more dangerous than boxing, because boxing, you're just using your fists, you know, with an MMA, you're using your legs, you know, they're on the ground, strangling each other with their legs. You know, you don't have that in boxing so much.
Well, I would typically in an Olympic year boxing, now men and women will mm-hmm. get some more attention, and that'll be exciting. Our guest has been Alicia Doyle, the author of Fighting Chance. My producer Jared's letting me know we're cutting down to time. Alicia, what's next, and where can people find the book, and what's next for you?
Oh, thank you. Fighting Chance is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. They can certainly go through my website at aliciadoyle.com. And I am actually, the book is keeping me very busy. I love doing interviews, so thank you so much, Brent, for this opportunity. I love chatting with you. But I'm also writing a children's book right now, so I've gone completely going from the fight game.
The news from Town Hall.
Oh, no, you're okay. Finish the thought.
Oh, it's kind of a serious book. So I thought my next book is going to be a children's book.